We have now another guest in the studio. Our guest is Mr. Marvin Brown. Good morning, Marvin.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being here. Now, Marvin came down to the studio this week, and we talked for a while about you are a veteran of the U.S. Army. Is that correct?
Second World War, yeah.
And you have some experiences and that have led you to certain beliefs about war that are perhaps not unusual, but maybe fairly uncommon for people that that have been in the war. So when did you join the Army?
I went in the Army in 1943. I was in for about 2.5 years. And
how old were you when you joined?
18.
18. And why did you join up?
Well, it was the thing to do. I agreed with the idea that we had to defeat Hitler. I volunteered for the Air Force at first, but they were full. They didn't need any pilots, so I went into the paratroopers.
Okay.
Took my training in Fort Bend in Georgia, and then they sent me over to France.
So you went over to the European... theater.
And, I got over there just in time to go into Bastogne, Belgium, in the Battle of the Bulge with the 101st Airborne.
For those of our listeners that don't know, what was the Battle of the Bulge? Is a fairly famous battle in the war.
Yeah, it was. It was. Well, they sent us into Bastogne, and we got surrounded there for 10 days, and it was pretty fierce. I've heard later that it stopped the German push. If they'd have gone through there without any opposition, they would have probably gone all the way.
Mm. And after that, you went further east, right?
Bastogne, we went back to Reims, France, and then they sent us into Holland. We went to the Nijmegen Bridge. That was a famous battle. Famous. I don't know why they call them famous. It was bloody.
Yeah.
And then we went into Germany, and I went all the way to Hitler's hideout in the Alps, in the Berchtesgaden.
And you're also responsible for guarding...
I stood guard over Hermann Göring.
We were talking about the film portrayal of him, which you said wasn't very accurate.
It didn't look very accurate to me because I don't remember him surrendering.
What happened?
Well, he was captured, and he eventually committed suicide with poison.
Yeah. They make him out to be something of a gentleman and officer in the film, I remember.
Yeah.
And there's this honor among officers that they always like to portray in Hollywood films.
But he wasn't a very honorable man.
No, I don't believe so.
We went through one town in Germany where they had still had the barracks where they kept the prisoners, and our whole the town come out and bury people that they'd murdered.
Really? The people in the town had murdered whom?
Oh, the military had murdered these people. Yeah.
In the town?
Yeah, they were civilians. I think they were probably Jewish, I don't know, but anyway, they'd murdered them all.
And your commanding officer made them go out and bury them all?
Yeah, made the whole town come out for the burial. Yeah.
Jeez.
I think it was in Salzburg, but I'm getting old in my memory. I don't remember names too well.
Were the people weren't buried at that point? Like they were just...
No, they were in these buildings, and they were just like if you've ever seen a chicken coop with wood on the bottom and then wire mesh all around.
Right.
And they kept these prisoners in there.
And was there any one point where your opinions about war started to change, or where you felt like...
Yeah. Well, when I was in Bastogne, I had one experience that, you know, we were told that the Germans were really bad, and they were really bad, but a lot of the German soldiers were just people that were drafted and told to go in and fight. And I remember in Bastogne there were young kids, probably 16 or 17 or 18, and some older men, as Hitler was pushing more people into the army towards the end of the war.
And they were getting younger and older, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember this one guy, he cried out, he said, "Don't shoot me, I got a wife and 4 kids.
Jesus.
That's when I started thinking differently about, you know, I could see that they were just like us. They were forced into it.
Yeah, with no real reason to fight, except maybe that they... Yeah.
And then after we got out of Bastogne and went back to France before we went to Holland, our general spoke to us, the one that had sent us into Bastogne, and he said, "What I want is bigger and better operations."
And what does that mean?
Well,
more people killed?
He thought that was a great battle, I guess. But he wasn't there at the time because he went home for Christmas.
Yeah.
When he sent us into Bastogne. But since I've been out of the army, and I've always been against build-up of military, because what happened in Germany was that industry loved Hitler because he spent a lot of money on equipment. Whenever a country builds up a big military, it's very hard to control it. It's like a cancer. Mm. It wants to be bigger. And I've seen that happen in the States, because when the Second World War started, we didn't have a large military in the States. But a lot of civilians, like myself, got into the military, and we were a part of defeating Hitler, which was good. But after the war, they kept getting bigger. The military kept getting bigger. And there really wasn't any reason for us to be over in Asia with our military.
Yeah.
And Vietnam was a disaster. Hundreds of people killed and hundreds of young American men killed. So it wasn't a good thing for the country. And that's what why I feel so strong about it, is because I hate to see Canada follow the same route of building up its military, because it's a waste of money and it's a waste of people's energy. And we live in a time now where we have to learn to live together if we're going to live, because the military is very hard on resources. If you travel down through the states and you can go through areas where the military is very big, you'll see the resources are depleted.
Which kind of resources?
Water.
Natural, yeah, okay. Yeah. As well, of course, armies use huge amounts of, well, I guess they use huge amounts of everything. They use huge amounts of metals and oil and people.
If you go to your surplus store, your army surplus stores, you see the waste. My son has an army surplus store. He did have one. He doesn't have it anymore. But I talked to him the other day, and he said he still orders stuff for some other people that have stores. And they got boxes of army uniforms that were still brand new in the boxes, and they were being sold as surplus. The army pays huge prices for everything they buy. I don't have the details, but I know that at one time I had a Jeep, and I bought it from a dealer, you know. But that same Jeep, if the military bought it, they'd probably pay twice as much for it.
And a lot of the stuff they end up not using, like the stuff they sell to the surplus.
Surplus right away, almost.
And when did you come up to Canada?
1956, I think. I was working in Alaska, and my oldest son was 16, and he got a notice to sign up for the draft. They wanted him to sign up.
At
not
16?
To be drafted, but to be signed up so that he would be drafted.
So he would have been drafted within the next couple of years.
Vietnam.
And I didn't want him to go in the Army, so I moved to Canada. And I thank Canada for that, because Canada's been good to me. My sons are all alive and well. I have three of them.
But now we are awfully close all the time with the American administration. And I know that Paul Martin's making a big show of rejecting the missile defense program. But I hear on the other side from Frank McKenna that it doesn't matter if we reject the missile defense program. We're still a part of it. And some people have said that it doesn't matter because those bombs are gonna explode over Canada anyway.
I don't trust Paul Martin, partly because of his history.
Mm.
He owned the big shipping fleets, and he laid off Canadian workers and hired workers from third world countries, and he registered his ships in third world countries so he wouldn't pay Canadian taxes on his income.
Yeah.
And now he's a prime minister.
So he actually starved one crew off of his boats in Australia. Shut off their water, shut off their food and their electricity, and starved them off the boat. And when they got off the boat, he replaced them, as you say, with Filipino workers paying one-third the rates and not having to abide by Canadian labor standards and safety standards.
So that sort of scares me.
Do you think we are building up our military? I mean, I know that the Conservative Party is saying that it's something we really need to do. I mean, why do we need to do this?
Why do we need a military? That's the question I ask, you know. Who's our enemies?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the whole current war on terrorism the U.S. is spearheading?
I think that whole idea of war on terror is a big lie. If you've ever sat through a bombing, that's terrorism. When you bomb people, that's terrorism, because you're totally helpless, and you can hear the planes, and you can hear the bombs falling, and you don't know where they're going to hit. That's real terrorism.
And that's what
the
good guys apparently
are doing in Iraq. They bomb civilians, and they don't know if they're hitting civilians or if they're hitting military people. And so if you're up there 40,000 feet dropping bombs, you don't know where they're going to hit.
Yeah, and you don't see it either. So
you don't see the bloodshed.
We had an American sergeant here on our show a few weeks back named Kevin Benderman. I think you've heard of him. He's refused to go back to Iraq. His wife was on the show with him, and she said that they were interviewed. They were talked to by one of their, maybe it was a lieutenant colonel or somebody slightly higher up than him, who said that, you know, he wished that he could impress upon these young guys in the Army that when they shoot somebody, they've got to look away. When that bullet hits, you got to turn your head away so that you don't see it, which seems to me like the most nonsensical thing I've ever heard. That if you're doing something that's so bad and so wrong that you've got to look away, maybe you shouldn't do it in the first place.
Right. Yeah. No, it's war isn't pretty. It's very gross. I don't want my grandchildren and great-grandchildren to have to go through it, because they make it look glamorous. They make the Army look like it's a glamorous place where you're doing brave brave things. But when you're in combat, you're not doing brave things. You're just trying to stay alive. And it's very haphazard because sometimes you don't even see the people that are shooting at you. And when artillery shells come in, you have no control. I was blown off the top of a half track that got hit. And it's not necessary anymore. We have the means of communication now where we can negotiate with anybody. And we have all the material in the world to deal with. Why should we waste it on war? It's a most wasteful, destructive thing. You know, there are whole areas in France that are still uninhabitable because of the bombs that are there and the shells that are there that aren't exploded.
Oh, yeah, the landmines. And the United States still hasn't signed onto that landmine treaty, the ban on landmines. So why? Well, I mean, I guess it's an economic thing. It's a big moneymaker.
Yeah, it's a moneymaker for the corporations.
I wonder sometimes if the United States even cared if they won the war in Vietnam because all of their various arms manufacturers and drug pushers made a whole bunch of money off of the war, and the same with Iraq.
And the market there kind of got opened up, like whether they quote-unquote won or not, it was opened up as a new market anyway. Another thing that Kevin Benderman's wife said that I thought was kind of interesting was how he wanted to leave the army, and he was being a conscientious objector, and she said it's so funny how because he doesn't want to kill people, he has to prove that he's sane. He's the one that has the onus on him to prove that he's sane because he doesn't want to kill people.
And if you go along with the idea of killing people, you're not crazy.
Yeah.
You're a hero.
Yeah.
How do you think we're ever going to end this? I mean, I don't think that the politicians really want to end anything. Certainly George Bush is in no great rush to stop going to war. He's promised us years and years and years of endless war, in fact.
Yeah. He's a very dangerous man. I think he's very much like Hitler, and the people who back him up are very much like the people who backed Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations. They see money, but they don't see the effects of what they're doing. And we're living at a time now where our resources are running out. And if we don't take care of them, there won't be any. And the future of our children and grandchildren is really what we have to start thinking about. We can have a powerful army, but it isn't going to save us. We have to protect our environment and our resources. And what we should be spending the money on is helping people who don't have these resources. A lot of people in the world don't have enough water.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be much better off if we built tankers and hauled water to those people than to build battleships and haul ammunition.
I mean, I think that individuals want to help people, but as a group, we seem to buy into this idea that, I mean, any time a Western nation, a developed nation, helps a third world nation, it's usually in the form of a loan.
In the form of some kind of self-interest.
Yeah, that they then have to pay back. Or they give them money, they loan the money, and then they say, we're going to help you build some roads. And we got the guys to build the roads, too. And
those
here they
roads
are
going to help us to get the resources that are in your country so you can pay back the loan.
I think it's very important, though, to speak out, as you're doing, to tell people the brutal truth about what the war is like, that it's not like what we see in the films.
Like Hollywood version.
No.
Do you think that things are going to have to get worse before they get better?
Well, I think it depends on what we do.
Mm-hmm.
If we speak out and tell our politicians what we want, we have the power to do that. Mm-hmm. I think we do, in a way.
Do you still believe in politicians in terms of their ability to change things?
We all have to change. One thing, we have to change the idea that we have to have so much stuff. You know, we consume lots of material things. We have to change that idea. We have to realize that we have to let other people in the world live, too.
Well, I think I really want to thank you, Marvin, for having the courage to say what you really believe and not just sort of going along with the ideas of bravery and honor and all of that kind of stuff.
It's a true form of bravery.
Thank you for having me, allowing me to do this, because I feel at this time it's crucial that we change our thinking.
I agree. Yeah, I just hope that more people sort of start to realize that this, these things like these war on terrorism and all this kind of stuff is just another way to keep us in fear and to keep us spending. You're listening to Elephant Talk on CHLY, and we've been speaking with U.S. Army veteran Marvin Brown.